Okay, welcome everyone to Equity Release, the other retirement income option. My name is Helena Hayes, I'm your chair for this session. I feel like it's a lot of echo. And I'm here to introduce our two speakers and then to facilitate the Q&A at the end. So our two speakers are James and Tim. James is the practice leader of Deloitte's Australian Actuarial Practice. He advises clients across the financial services sector, including insurers, banks, non-banks, wealth managers, and public sector agencies. He's been actively involved in the equity release sector as an area of specialist interest for over 20 years, assisting many of the non-bank lenders in entering the market in the early 2000s. He has stayed involved with providers ever since, including in more recent times, advising governments and regulators on the potential for the product and oversees potential market entrants and investors. Tim Barron is an actuarial consultant in the Investments and Superannuations Advisory Team at Deloitte as well. He has been involved in a number of projects looking at the evolution and opportunities for equity release products in Australia to address the challenges facing current and future retirees. So I think we have a presentation for about 30 minutes and then we'll have 5 to 10 or 10 to 15 minutes for Q&A at the end, which I will facilitate. And please remember to add questions to the app as we're going. Cool. Over to you. Thank you.
All right. Hi, everyone. All right, equity release. Yes, I have had over 20 years' experience in this sector. You wouldn't believe it looking at me, would you? Yes, you would. Okay, if I can get this clicker to work. Right, what we'll take you through today is a bit of facts and figures about equity release. We also want to put it in the right context too. It's not all about commercial products, reverse mortgages. There's other mechanisms such as downsizing as the most obvious form of equity release. But we will talk about the role that the wealth in the home can potentially be considered to provide for retirees. I just came from chairing a previous session around the longevity challenge for people when they move into retirement and the issue around liquid assets versus non or illiquid assets. The home is an illiquid asset, but it's still an asset. And many people don't necessarily see it that way until they're forced to actually use the wealth that's tied up in the home. One thing we did add, which I think is really interesting, is we surveyed super funds to see have they thought about this sector, particularly in the context of their retirement income covenant obligations, so both from providing it to their members or guiding their members about how to use the home as a potential asset in retirement, but also as an investor, would super funds look at putting some of their members' funds in accumulation phase to invest in offering this product? And get the return that an equity release product could provide their investors as an asset class. So we'll share some of those findings with you as well. Knowing that you're probably at your peak attendance at the moment, we put a quick summary of everything we're going to talk about here in the answers. Doesn't mean you can just sleep after that, but I thought we'd hit you early with some of the key messages we've got. So the equity in the home, it is a voluntary form of savings, and that did explicitly get mentioned in the Treasury Review for the Retirement Income Review in 2020. It was great to see it finally recognised in a government focus around retirement options. Downsizing, like I said, is the most common form, and for many people that will still be the most appropriate form. But there are certainly commercial financial products that exist, and we will go through those today. The challenges that we'll describe later is they're probably not well understood by the broader market, and in particular consumers and super funds themselves. But in terms of those commercial products, there is a really established regulatory framework in place. ASIC has looked at the sector a number of times in the past. It's got very defined obligations upon issuers around the product. APRA also has clear capital requirements for lenders that are ADIs that want to issue the product. And so going into offering the product, it is in the construct of a well-established already sector and regime around some of the compliance and consumer protections that are in place. There is already a government version of the product, and we'll share a little bit of that later, which is the Home Equity Access Scheme. It was previously called the Pension Loan Scheme, as well as private sector versions of equity release, both reverse mortgage but also shared equity schemes as well. One thing we'll point out, though, is that no major bank has offered the product in several years. So it's largely the government and specialist lenders, be they non-bank lenders or niche lenders in the marketplace. Distribution has varied over the years. It is a credit product if you want to issue a reverse mortgage. Therefore, you either do it direct to consumer as the credit license holder, or you work through mortgage brokers. Financial planners have generally not been active in the sector, which is a real challenge we'll come to later, because they're often the group that retirees will go to seek to get guidance on as to their options in retirement. And if it's a product which financial planners can't offer, then there is a challenge as to how well they understand it and have they got the right licensing requirements to be able to advise their customers. And lastly, we think equity release is a sector with considerable upside. We'll share the results of the survey that we did with the super funds. And we're also seeing overseas interest and growth in the sector, and we'll touch on that as well. Okay, some facts and figures. So at the moment, we estimate retirees have about $1.3 trillion in housing equity. It's always good when you put a trillion in front of something, because it gets you up in the big league, doesn't it, with super fund assets and with mortgage debt and so forth. So across Australia, though, Australians have more than $10 trillion in housing wealth, residential housing wealth. I think it's about 10.5 now, with the recent sort of property price growth we saw post the COVID period, it's gone up. Across 11 million residential households, it's bumping up to near $1 million, the average dwelling value. Not quite there yet, although if you live in Sydney or Melbourne, it's probably well above that, so it does get weighed down across the country. The opportunity is, at the moment, the average superannuation balance, while the average is about 540,000, the median's only 300,000. So you take out the skewness of those funds that are very, very large, and the median household in age 60 to 64 has $300,000 in super. If their average house value corresponds to what we're seeing on average across the country, then they've got $900,000 in their property. 80% of retirees own their property. Less are owning it absolutely outright, and we'll come to the fact later that many are entering retirement owning but having debt, and so they have to look at discharging that debt. But there is certainly a period of time, and we'll show a slide in a moment, where there is still more wealth tied up in the home than what there is for people in their superannuation balance. In terms of breaking that $10 trillion market down into the addressable market for equity release, you've got to stratify it down by age groups in households and so forth. But we estimate once you get down to the households, including married versus single couples, and the 80% that own the home outright over the age of 65, we estimate that's $1.3 trillion. But obviously not all of that could be accessed from an equity release product because lenders put various age-based loan-to-value ratios on how much they will prudently provide. So once you adjust for the LVR, and you've also got to adjust for location, because not all lenders will accept all properties, because ultimately they're taking a risk on the long-term value of that property and the certainty of getting that value of that property. So we think there's probably about $300 billion is the potential size of the equity release market if all eligible people use the product. So that's a big market, but clearly not everyone, even not the vast majority of people, it's suitable for. But at the moment, the outstanding stock of reverse mortgages and other forms of equity release is probably, we estimate, $3 to $4 billion, so barely over 1% of what that addressable market could be. So that's where we think there's great upside, but we'll also cover later the challenges to tap into that upside. Well, I'll hand over to Tim to talk a bit about how this links into the retirement income strategy.
Thanks, James. So under the Retirement Income Covenant, which came into effect on 1 July 2022, superannuation trustees are required to formulate a retirement income strategy that helps members achieve and balance the three covenant objectives, which we can see on the bottom left-hand side of this screen. And that being said, to assist trustees balance these objectives, super funds should be putting equity release products on their radar. And as James alluded to previously, this was highlighted by Treasury in its 2020 Retirement Income Review report, which explicitly called out the value of the third pillar of voluntary savings. And it stated that accessing home equity can significantly bolster the retirement income of retirees without solely having to rely on their superannuation balance. Now, this was, as James mentioned, great acknowledgement by Treasury of this product, and something that isn't actively considered by many Australian retirees. The graph to the right of the slide showcases what we like to call the equity release sweet spot. And what this does is it highlights that individuals retiring over the next decade with relatively low balances, those individuals who haven't accumulated a full working lifetime of mandatory super contributions, equity release products may be a desirable solution for them to bolster and supplement their retirement income. That being said, as James mentioned, downsizing is the ultimate form of equity release, and it's something that my parents have just recently undertaken. This has the advantage of immediate cash flow and also the ability to contribute up to $300K for singles and $600K for couples into superannuation as a tax-free downsizer contribution, tax-exempt, I should say. That being said, there are several disadvantages and frictional costs that must be considered. As I'm sure many of in the room are aware, frictional costs associated with selling a home and buying a home are not insignificant, stamp duty and real estate fees, to name a couple examples. And the impact that downsizing has on one's age pension eligibility is another key consideration. A retiree's home is not included in the assets test for the age pension, but when you sell that home and you release the capital after an exemption period of 12 months, the proceeds from the sale of that home are assessed as income and may impact one's age pension requirement. So that being said, I'll pass back to James to speak to the types of equity release products available in our Australian market.
Thanks, Tim. Did your parents get the support of the family members to downsize?
Of course.
Sure they did. The kids support it. I was going to say, that's often one of the biggest challenges with downsizing, though, to be honest, is the family attachment to the home. Either the parents themselves have all the memories there, they're not quite ready to move out of the house, get rid of the pool room with all the memories and the photos of the kids and the grandkids, or the children themselves have an attachment to that home. So, good to hear it was clear in your example, Tim. Good. All right, so if you don't want to downsize, and the timing might not be right. In fact, what our experience shows with many of the reverse mortgage borrowers in particular is they access a reverse mortgage very early in their retirement life stages. They don't wait till they're 85 and absolutely have to use it. They actually use it between the ages of 65 and 70. They're not quite ready to tap into their super. They want to keep that as a liquid reserve of money to meet their ongoing expenditure needs. But they may have lumpy desires. They might want to travel the world. They might want to renovate the home. They might want to buy other discretionary things like a new car. So for many of those purposes, using the equity in their home can be a viable alternative to running down your superannuation balance, especially if it means that it puts you under more liquid cash flow stress by tapping into your super in such a big way too early. We'll come to it. Well, actually, I was mentioning now, the average amount that people draw down for an equity lease product is about $100,000. So it's not an insubstantial amount of money they pull out, and they pull it out for specific, one or two purchases that they want to do at that time. So the various commercial products out there, we mentioned the government one earlier, the Home Equity Access Scheme. It's more of an income stream version. It does have a limited lump sum ability, but it's mainly to give people up to 150% of the age pension. You don't need to be receiving an age pension to get this, so you can be a self-funded retiree, yet still be eligible technically for the age pension because of your age and nationality status. And you can then use the government scheme to withdraw up to 150% on a fortnightly basis of the age pension. And the great thing is the current interest rate is 3.95%. Back when COVID happened and all the rates went down to 0.1% cash rate, the government was under a lot of pressure to reduce the rate from 4.95 down to 3.95, yet they haven't increased it since post-COVID. And that is for all of us with forward mortgages, you know how good a rate 3.95% is at the moment. Compare that to commercial providers on the right-hand side. Very much a similar product, but they offer the bigger lump sums. So while the government's a ratio of the age pension, commercial providers will give a bigger lump sum. Often they'll give like a 20% loan-to-value ratio as a maximum facility threshold at age 65. They offer a no negative equity guarantee, as does the government product. But because they've got to operate in a commercial construct and get returns to investors, the interest rates are about 9.75% for the commercial products. So that's quite a big difference between, obviously, the government version, but you get a different options in terms of the amount of money you can access. A big challenge going forward for many retirees, we mentioned earlier 80% of retirees own their own home. They don't own it necessarily outright. More retirees are entering retirement with debt. I think there was a survey by AMP that was released late last year that said it quadrupled over the last 20 years the number of retirees entering retirement still carrying a mortgage debt. So for many of these retirees, once they technically have no income to service that mortgage, many of the reasons they go and take out an equity release now, or one of the reasons they take it out alongside the other expenditure reasons, is to actually discharge their forward mortgage and swap it for a reverse mortgage, because a reverse mortgage requires no regular servicing. It just capitalises with interest until you decide to either sell your home or you pass away. So debt restructuring is actually a growing opportunity for equity release products, but you trade off the interest rate being around 6.5% for a forward mortgage to paying 9.75% for the equity release. Look, two other schemes do exist that are somewhat shared equity schemes. So a reverse mortgage is a loan product with capitalising interest. Shared equity is you sell or do a deferred sale of a portion of the value of your property to a third party organisation. And then they get the, when you sell the property, they get their share plus normally some multiple of their LVR in terms of the capital growth. And that's their imputed return which they get. So their return is a leveraged capital growth return. And it's a leverage because if you sell a portion of your home to a third party investor, they should expect to get notional rental yield plus capital growth. They're not charging rental yield, so they need to get a higher multiple of the capital growth to cover the in lieu lost rental income. So the main provider in that market is HomeSafe, and that's part of the Bendigo Bank Group. So there's a few different options out there, government, commercial, and within the commercial, reverse mortgage versus shared equity. All right, consumer needs, uses and benefits. Tim, you going to take us through this?
Thanks, James. So the target market, as we've alluded to many times, is retirees typically aged over 65 that are asset rich in their homes but cash poor. What equity release products do is they provide liquidity either as a lump sum or as an income stream that can be used for various purposes, as we can see on screen. The first of which, and has been covered, is personal expenditure, the likes of overseas holidays, renovations, new vehicles, discretionary purposes. And another one is also bequest motives. A lot of people want to pass on to their kids and grandkids. The second is aged care costs and healthcare costs. We were just in a session too, and just prior to this, and that has typically increased as those costs increase as individuals age. And increasingly, there's a bond required to finance to enter the aged care market, and equity release might be a liquidity source to fulfil that need. The third piece is debt reduction, and James talked to this, but many Australians are entering retirement with carrying a forward mortgage, which wasn't the case 40 years ago. And AMP research suggests that over the past 20 years, the number of retirees entering retirement with debt has quadrupled, which is a significant figure. And what this means is there needs to be alternative solutions, and equity release potentially fills that gap. We can see the customer uses and benefits on the right-hand side of the screen. And I think because there's no... the key one is that it not acting as a sole use for an individual's retirement income. The superannuation which they've accumulated throughout their lifetime is the key source for that. But equity release potentially provides a supplement or an increase to that retirement income with the ability to remain in their home, which is something that is often taken out the emotional side to the decision. There's many challenges and opportunities for growth that exist within the Australian equity release market, and James is going to talk to them now.
Thanks, Tim. I'll also just one more on this staying in your home. With the research that was done in the aged care sector and the government report into the aged care sector, it's been identified the challenge around the space and supply of viable aged care spots for people. Being able to age in home is another option which was raised there, and for the government to support home services for the elderly people to actually help them not put the pressure on the aged care system but instead live in their own home but potentially access the equity in their home to pay for those services to support them to live a comfortable existence in that home. So the government's certainly aware of the role of the home that it can play both in being a utility value, a roof over your head and a place to live, as well as a potential way in which you can pay for services that support you in doing that. All right, so the challenges, and these are not new, they're not new products, and these challenges are not new either. They've been around probably for most of the 20 years that I've been involved in the sector. And we do need to address some of them really clearly if this market's going to grow. So traffic light indicators here, some of them are green, some amber, some red. So the green ones, which I think we need to acknowledge, is the regulatory environment and the consumer protections are in place. So it has been in there through ASIC and through APRA. Legislation exists through the NCCP, which is the National Consumer Credit Protection Act, which stipulates the no negative equity guarantee, for instance. ASIC controls all the disclosure that needs to be done at point of sale around these products to make sure you meet your obligations around conduct for consumers. And as I said earlier, APRA for those ADIs offering the product has very clear capital frameworks for that. It is an established market. It's been around for over 20 years in Australia and longer overseas. It does have experience, and as actuaries in the room, we all know the value of analysing experience to set future assumptions. There are over 20 years' worth of statistics on this sector. We actually did the stats for the sector for the first 12 years, and that collected all the information about the early repayment rates. So many people early on thought, oh, these products are bought by or taken out by a 65-year-old, and they will keep it till they die at 90. That was not the case at all. There's about a 10 to 15% per annum voluntary repayment rate. So that brings liquidity back. It brings money back in so you can re-lend to new borrowers going forward. So it's a misnomer, I think, that these are set and forget products that last 20 to 30 years. Yes, the mean term might be around 10 to 12 years, which is longer than a forward mortgage at about 4 to 5 year loan life, but it's not the 20 to 30 years that many people think. But we'll come to the challenge of what that longer effective loan life means in a moment. Providers, look, I think it's an amber light here. There are non-banks mainly that offer the product at the moment, or some ADIs do offer it, but they're more niche ADIs in the marketplace. And we'll talk about the benefit of being an ADI in a moment. Mostly it's reverse mortgages in the commercial space. As I said earlier, the Bendigo business HomeSafe does offer a shared equity version, but most of the other providers offer a reverse mortgage. Two major banks did offer the product up until around 2016 to 2017. So CBA offered it for decades, and its subsidiary Bank West also offered the product up until around 2016, at which time they stopped writing new loans for the product. And Westpac, when it acquired St George was writing the product through a previous acquisition of the Advance Bank in New South Wales, but Westpac ultimately was still writing them up till around that time as well. But neither of those two are actively writing new reverse mortgages. Ironically, their institutional banking arms are providing warehouses for those non-bank lenders that want to offer the product. So somewhere across the group, they are still supporting the sector. Distribution channel clarity, again, I think it's been great. There's a number of brokers that really get this market. There's clear rules for them around the credit licensing that they need and the point of sale disclosure. But it's a challenge that financial planners aren't more actively involved in this sector, given it's such a potential question people will have as to how they can leverage their home to support their retirement income aspirations. Harmonisation with broader retirement. It's good the Treasury Review identified the role of the home. However, super funds, and we'll show our survey in a moment, super funds have still not embraced this as an opportunity, although I won't give any teaser, we'll wait till we get there, around what our findings were there. So the two red light areas, which have really been around for a while and haven't been properly tackled, is the awareness and education. Both general consumers, but also particularly other stakeholders, and I mentioned their example, political stakeholders. Back when two of the big banks were offering the product, and there are a lot more non-bank lenders, there was active marketing going on, there was promotion, there was general consumer awareness that was growing around what this product was. And that was even before all the ASIC reviews that really gave a good positive reflection upon the sector. Nowadays, I think it does struggle because of a lack of what I'll call a legitimate or big name brand out there. If one of the big four banks came in and started to actively promote this product, you would find suddenly the perception would change. But they know if they did that, they'd have to do all the heavy lifting around the consumer awareness, addressing all the questions around reputational risk, conduct risk, and so forth. So it's a chicken and egg. It takes one of the big ones to sort of support the sector, but they also don't want to because their focus is elsewhere. We have seen, though, in the UK market, where the sector has really experienced strong growth in recent years, Legal in general re-entered the market in the UK, and that was a real impetus to have such a brand like L&G proactively write the product and promote it to consumers in the UK. The other red light is the business model itself. It's the funding. As I said earlier, the average loan life for these could be 10 to 12 years. If you're an investor who's used to investing in forward mortgages, we'll call them, or normal mortgages, you probably want to, if you're a AAA investor, you probably want your money back after 18 months to 2 years. You want to be paid your principal back and your interest in regular quarterly coupons payments. Reverse mortgages, you are not going to get someone, you know, taking out the product and then selling it within 12 months. They may keep it for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. So the average term to which investors get their money back, theoretically, in these products is a lot longer. And it's very hard for investors who are used to forward mortgages with a 3 to 5 year loan life to get their head around a 10 to 12 year loan life for equity release. It's very hard for the issuers to structure products which don't place undue risk on the issuer to call it after 3 to 5 years to give them the liquidity that they need. However, we are seeing overseas life insurers in particular starting to look at the Australian market to fund the Australian market. Any market that has big defined benefit pension obligations or annuity liability obligations potentially has an asset opportunity to match this liability side as well. So we are finding it's the big life insurers that have big annuity pools or big overseas pension funds that are looking at the potential to use equity release as a vehicle to invest some of that money in, because the yield is quite good at 9.75%. It's quite a healthy return that they can potentially get out of this for that. However, they're carrying the liquidity carry cost, but if they've got matched liabilities on the other side, then it can offset that quite well. All right, so they're the challenge that we see, but a lot of the groups, that's why many of the groups want to be an ADI, so they can at least write or take deposits to help with their funding. But if you're a non-bank lender, you have to rely upon investors, and that is the big challenge to get investors to get their head around how to make a return out of the delayed cash flow profile of these products. Okay. Super funds. All right. So we thought we'd spice this presentation up a little bit by doing a survey of funds. Tim, how many funds was it in the end?
The top 20 largest industry super funds and the top 3 largest public sector funds were surveyed, and we got 12 to 15 responses.
So. Yeah. So, and the reason we asked the question of the super funds is back to those two red lights out there. How do you get consumer awareness up? Well, super funds have an obligation under a retirement income covenant to help their members navigate through retirement. And it was flagged in the Treasury Review that home ownership is an element of the potential way in which they've got to navigate that. So we think that super funds will touch so many members out there. We really want to understand if they thought about this and having discussions around the product. Secondly, you think about access to funding and investors. Super funds, is it $3.3 trillion, I think, of funding? They sit on a lot of asset pools that is growing. Would they look at actually investing in this as an asset class for their members to get a fair commercial return on their money? And if you think about accumulation members, theoretically, they've got a long time horizon. If you're a 25, 30-year-old, you're not going to be accessing the money until you reach preservation age or retirement. So it does tend to align with a long-term investment horizon that many members may well have. So we asked both from would they offer the product or design a product to their members and raise awareness, and would they fund it from an issuer's point of view? I'll hand over to you, Tim, to take us through some of those responses.
Okay. Yes, as James mentioned, we'll first touch on the product side. So we split our survey into interviewing the chief product and chief retirement officers of the 12 of the largest industry super funds, and the slides towards the end of this presentation speak to the investment side, which interviewed the chief investment officers. So this slide talks to whether trustees have considered equity release products as part of their retirement income strategy. and the second slide, the second chart speaks to when, if not. So what we see is about a third of the super funds considered, surveyed, have partially considered equity release as a viable solution to their members, but haven't actioned it in any practical sense. So the subsequent question to that is, when do you think this might be more visible in your retirement income strategies? And we saw about over 40% said within the next 1 to 5 years. So we see here 58% of respondents said unlikely in the medium term, but you know, pleasingly, over 40% see it in the near future.
Can I say, Tim, I think with an optimism bias hat on, I think that's really good, because even though that's not the majority saying they see it, the fact that even up to 40% have said, yeah, in the next 1 to 5 years, I think if we had asked this question 12, 18 months ago, it would have been probably hardly any. So I think the fact that some are even thinking of it is great. It only takes a few of the big funds to start to proactively bring it on, and I think it will start to have that trickle effect through the rest of the group.
Yep, great point, James. So this slide speaks to the future of equity release in the Australian landscape, and we asked the funds which of the below options would you consider is relevant to the future of equity release. The overwhelming response, 58% of respondents said that equity release is going to have a continued challenge with acceptance and reputation, and about 5%, which is the on the left hand side, said there's a strong increased demand by retirees for the offering. So whilst it's clear from this slide that these products still face headwinds from a super fund perspective, there is still an appetite, albeit limited, to support these products in their retirement income strategies.
Next one, mine, is it?
Yep.
All right. So this is more of a hypothetical. If they were to offer it, thanks, Tim. How they do it, and what sort of model would they use? Would they partner with someone? Would they do a referral model? Would they actually formally advise upon it? Really interesting that half said if we were to do it, it'd be a referral. I still think that's probably they're trying to navigate their way through the quality of advice review as to what they can actually offer advice on. We don't know how many of them actually understood this is a credit product. If they want to go the reverse mortgage option, it's a credit product, so they need a credit license to actually engage around this product, which may be why they went a referral model instead. And we've heard some funds say, look, we'll give guidance, we'll give some opportunities for them to go and talk to a specialist group. But I think the hesitancy around even a referral model is a referral model could come with an in-principle endorsement of that provider that they're passing on to. So I think funds are wary of that. So there's still a bit to work through for them. If they didn't want to offer it in-house themselves, how do they partner with a third party? Is this me or you? I'll take it. All right. Okay. All right. So the largest challenges for equity release. So product design and complexity and lack of understanding by members. I think that was one of our red traffic light ones earlier, is that awareness and education. But that just takes time. Like anything, explaining a concept like this, it just takes a bit of time. And I think that's a far more achievable one to get their head around. Product design is interesting. There's not much variation in the product design at the moment. Reverse mortgage versus shared equity, yes, that's different, but within the reverse mortgage sector, there's not a lot of different variation. But look, those two are definitely able to be addressed and moved on from. I think what was really encouraging here was operational issues, regulatory compliance, and distribution weren't seen as big impediments at the moment. All right. Now, this is across to the Chief Investment Officers.
Sure.
Yourself, Tim.
Thanks, James. So the second part of this survey was to interview, what we got was 5 responses from the CIOs of the 20 largest industry super funds and asked them a range of questions in relation to whether they'd consider investment into these equity release style products. And the first question, as we see here, is, have you considered it? The overwhelming response here was no. but I guess if you're looking at the positive, 20% had thought about it. And this slide talks to, if you did consider it as an investment option, which asset class would it fall under? It's not, doesn't particularly fit in any of the main or standard asset classes. It shares blends of characteristics of property, equity. It's got debt style characteristics as well. We got four respondents to this question. There was an even split between alternatives and hybrid. A hybrid isn't a defined asset class, but it shares a mix of characteristics of both equities and debt. And then the graph to the right on the screen talks to what scale of investment flows would your super fund need to make this investment worthwhile? And what we observed was that there's a significant flow of funds. No one responded with less than 500 billion. So all respondents said it needs to be a significant flow of funds of 500 million or more to even get a spot on the Superfund radar. So that's not insignificant.
Yeah, and that is probably at the moment the sector's only doing around 300, 400 million across all the current providers per annum. So it's a reasonable step up they'd need to demonstrate to make this a viable funding solution through super funds.
Yep. So that concludes the formal part of our presentation, and we welcome the opportunity for any virtual or in-person questions.
Thanks, Tim. All right. Thank you, Mark.
Yep. You'll take that one. Yep. Mm-hmm. There we go. Thank you both very much. Great. We've got one question, so there should be time for a couple more afterwards if anyone does have questions. And we've got, I think, 7 minutes, so yes. And actually, I think we might take the in-person question first, if you want to go ahead.
I'm sure you want to hear this. Great presentation, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
My question is not targeted at what you've done. But if you're looking at super funds, there are two issues that need to be taken into account, quite apart from the fact that 5 out of 5 of your chief investment officers said no, in effect. One thought about it, but said no anyway. But the two issues are, without a decent quality of advice review outcome, targeted at the retirement market, not at the accumulation market. Super funds are a B2B model. That is, super fund to employer through whom they collect contributions to accumulate. They don't yet have, without a proper QAR outcome, a B2C model. So distribution is a challenge. Secondly, if you're going to start lending like a bank, you need to put money aside in prudential capital, like a bank, and super funds have no prudential capital. So I see two critical issues that need to be thought about. So sorry, great presentation,
yeah.
But those two are almost impossible to overcome without change.
Yeah, no, it's on. That's spot on. And our slide that we had as to how they'd offer the product. That's why I think many of them said referral, because they can't manufacture themselves, given the limitations on a super fund, to do that. So referral has to be that. But again, without the quality of advice review being clear, how can they do that? Do they have their in-house advisors, though, offer a version of the product? They partner, they just tick and flick. But even a tick and flick would come with some degree of endorsement or obligation. So it's absolutely, it's a really difficult area for not just super funds offering guidance around using the home equity, but any other form of product or service outside of what they've got immediate visibility and carriage over.
Okay, so we have another question here from Nina, which I'm delighted you asked because I had a similar question before the session as well, which is, do you have any insights into why major banks have not been offering this product in recent times? And I'll add a second part to that as well, which is, do you think there's anything we as the insurance industry could do to facilitate any of the big banks doing something in this space?
Oh, okay, I don't know where. Was that 5 minutes to go? Or?
Oh,
I got 5 minutes. Okay. The major banks were involved in the sector up until about 2016, as I said, but in a, I'd call it, passive way. The way people would say to me is, if you were a customer and you heard that CBA offered the product and you went to a branch and asked CBA, I want to take out a reverse mortgage, the probably 9 times out of 10, the teller would say, oh, what do we offer? And they just would not know that they offered it. So it wasn't really actively promoted by either of those two banks, really, through their proprietary channel. They certainly used the broker channel. The reason they pulled out wasn't that there was any misconduct issues. In fact, the AFCA, or the previous FOS, as it was back then, really didn't have any issues that really stuck against the role of the lender in offering the product. The reason was, I think, for those groups, they knew the Royal Commission was coming up. They really wanted to focus on working their way through that and to have, to be honest, a decimal place in their total loan book, which potentially could have reputational or misconduct or just operational risk issues for such a small part of their business. I think that gave them nervousness, and they just thought it's easier for us to change our pricing or push harder in the forward mortgage market to get more volume than what we'd get by staying active in the reverse mortgage market. So it is a pity, but I do know that they're always keeping an eye on the sector. They're always keeping an eye on what's the strategic upside for Equity Release, because it is a lending product, and so they do get the product and they do get how to write it, which is probably why they're also on the Insto Bank, supporting with warehouses where they can, some of the non-bank lenders. The next question was insurers. What can they do? Write more annuities would be good, because I think if you write more annuities, you'll have a reason to perhaps hedge it by doing reverse mortgages, but that's probably unlikely to be a short-term answer that's sustainable. But that's certainly why UK insurers are in the market.
I've got one more question on here. So the question here is, do you think high capital city property prices will impede product adoption?
High capital city property prices will impede
product adoption. So maybe comparing high capital cities to lower property prices elsewhere.
Well, at the moment, most reverse mortgage providers mainly work through capital cities or major metropolitan regions, because fundamentally they want to place certainty around their risk is the no negative equity guarantee, because they offer that and they have to. So that means the borrower cannot owe more than the value of the property when the borrower has to repay, so the lender wears that risk. They often look more at land, and they look at the land value. The dwelling on that land will deteriorate. They know that over 20 or 30 years, particularly for retirees that may not be, you know, doing the renovations, adding the extra rooms and so forth. So it's more confidence around the underlying land value, and is it an area that will always be sought after and have a strong secondary market. So that's, I don't think they're worried about the growing property prices in those areas, because they're looking at the land and the finite supply of that versus the demand in that area. But it is a reason why they struggle to offer equity lease products in regional areas that don't have well-established and liquid buy-sell markets for homes.
Probably got time for one more question. If there's none from the room, I'm going to be selfish and use mine.
Chairman's call.
You spoke earlier about the success of this product overseas, and I wondered if there was any learnings from overseas experience, in particular in regards to customer confidence of the product or reputational aspects, and anything we can learn from overseas that we could take here.
Okay, Tim.
I might just... Oh.
It's the cowbell, but we'll answer it.
Well, just in terms of the take-up overseas, and then maybe James could speak to the question itself, but in the UK, we estimate on our very first slide about 1% of eligible retirees take it up, whereas in the likes of the US, Canada and the UK, that's what we call the penetration rate is between 3% and 5%. So the awareness thing is certainly a big factor.
Yeah, it's bigger. It's still not mainstream, even in those markets. But what I mentioned earlier, certainly having a brand name come into the market as a provider is quite important to give it legitimacy. Although I think the great thing we have over here is the federal government is actually a provider of a version of the product. So I think that gives some degree of legitimacy if that was actually promoted in a positive way. But certainly a large commercial provider would help. On the regulatory front, I think it's very harmonious what the Australian requirements are and the consumer protections are versus the UK and elsewhere. In fact, the Australian regime had the benefit of looking at the UK and some of the missteps over there and some of the positive improvements they made, and that's all pretty much in our legislation now. So I don't think there's anything fundamentally missing around those aspects other than, as I said earlier, those two red lights, which is the awareness and helping support that, and that is helped by brands coming in and putting their brand, I suppose, out there around the product. And the other one is funding, because it's very hard for new entrants to come into the sector and offer the product if they can't have certainty of funding. And even those non-banks who would love to grow, and well, Tim said grow from 1% penetration to 5% is a big market uptake, but if you can't sustainably offer the product going forward, if you cap out at a certain size and have to turn the tap off, that's a terrible thing to have to do. So it's that sustainability of funding, which is the other challenge for us.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
Good. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.